I'm Hal Eisner, and this is What the Hal. You know, we say what the hell, but it really, in 2017, when it came to brush fires and disasters here in California, it really was more like what the hell. It was terrible. It was the worst year on record for brush fires in the state. Firefighters were up against intense conflagrations, literally. Big, bad fires creating their own wind and popping houses out of existence from one place to another place, just like you could snap your fingers. I was there. I watched this in Ventura County, and it still is an image in my mind. The two firefighters you're about to meet were there as well, and one of them, a division chief that I will tell you had his hands full those first two nights of the Thomas Fire, which is the one that caused so much damage. Over 1,000 homes were destroyed. The other firefighter is retired. He's an assistant chief. And oddly enough, I guess ironically enough, a man who had spent his entire life fighting fires lost his home in that fire. Let's listen. There are two fire seasons. There's winter fire season and there's summer fire season, right? And that's because we talk about fire season and we think of it being all year round. But it's really, there are two periods of the year where conditions are right for bad fires. And we're getting into a season where it's either going to be worse than last year or better than last year. But last year was the worst we ever had in this part of California. Actually, even with Napa up north, it was a pretty bad fire season. So all of California took a bad hit. Jeff Shea is one of the chiefs at, what do we call it, division chief?
Division chief, that's correct.
At Ventura County Fire Department. Andy Ortega is retired. He was an assistant chief. And let's explain for people these fire seasons. It is kind of like there's a fire season year-round, but really there are two fire seasons. Is that right?
That's accurate. I mean, traditionally what we think of is the summer months as being our quote-unquote fire season, where we typically get wildland fires, more starts, more acreage burns. But now it's extended into the fall and into the winter months. And if we don't get rain, which this year we didn't get, at least in Ventura County, didn't get that. We got rain in the sense that we got volume, but we didn't get the extended rain. So really, talking to our meteorologists in Ventura County, we haven't had a drop of rain in 2 months. And with that puts us 2 months ahead with the grass crop that grew with the rain we did get is now dried and is 2 months ahead of schedule. So thinking about that, as opposed to being May dryness, we're July dryness now. And so we're just that much further ahead. And to your point, you know, we really haven't gone out of fire season, at least this year.
Yeah, it feels like we're wrapped around fire season all the time. And that's why I was trying to distinguish between a winter season and a summer season. Andy, you dealt with this for years, and then when the Thomas Fire came along, you were one of the victims.
Right.
You lost your house.
Right.
Talk about that.
About the house loss, or do you want to chat about fire seasons?
I want to talk about both.
Okay, so I'll take the fire season and add on to, you know what, I came on in 1980 in the fire department. My dad came on in 1960. And so I asked him some time ago after the big Montecito fires, what about this, you know, climate change and stuff like that? And he says, I asked him, you know, do we always have extreme fires like this? And, you know, he said, yeah, but not in May. Pay attention, boy, something's changing out there. And so I started to think about it, and it occurred to me that, you know, something was changing, and whether it's droughts that are 10 out of 13 years and things like that. When I came on in 1980, there was a period of maybe 4 or 5 months where I did not put my wildland firefighting gear on the fire engine. Everybody just put it to the side, and it was just, okay, we're out of fire season. Last probably 10 years at least, that stuff came on the engine, or if it was a battalion chief sub or my division chief sub or AC sub, it was on all year round. And I'd venture to say everybody in Southern California that fights fire does not take off their gear ever, whereas in 1980, we did. So that's just a show that we're prepared all the time. It's not like we can let our guard down anymore at any time of the year. Now, getting to the house loss, talking about that, it was painful. You know, I've read fires, and you could see it just by, you know, looking overhead and seeing the smoke, whether it's on top of you, whether hot ash is dropping on your hand, it's too late. You better just duck. That wasn't the case. The fire was railing east to west above our hills. I'm about a mile down from the brush line. So if we were to talk the wildland urban interface, which we call WUI, you know, I really felt like I was in a safe spot as far as, you know, defensible space, 100 feet at a mile. So I wasn't expecting it to drop down so intense the way it did. So that caught me off guard.
That was the winds? Is that what drove that?
Yes.
And so the Thomas Fire took over 1,000 homes. Mm-hmm. Ventura County really never lost homes to that degree.
Yeah, I was really prideful of, you know, our former fire chief, Bob Roper, had a slide, and it would indicate in the last 10 years how many homes we had lost as compared to all the other counties in the state of California. And I love to show that slide everywhere because I just had so much pride about Ventura County Fire, right, until this year. And not that I don't have the pride in it, but it's all of a sudden it hit home. And the reality is what we call ornamentals or regular brush or avocado orchards or things like that, we're starting to recognize that the brush or the foliage around your homes burns just as well as the chaparral brush that we would typically say, okay, that's going to burn and this won't. And we're starting to recognize that these fuels are burning nearly the same because we've been in this drought for such a long time. And because the intensity of not just the fire, the wind, but the head fire coming into homes. And now you have homes burning on homes, which we saw in Santa Rosa and also in the Thomas Fire.
People have asked me over the years, what's the difference between writing for television and writing for radio? And I've always used this example that when you're writing for radio, you're writing to the imagination. For instance, the flames were licking out from under the stairwell, and you see a tongue of flame coming out, and that's an image that you create in one's mind. Television, however, is that old thing about a picture says 1,000 words. It shows the tongue of flame coming out from under the stairwell, and now what do you say? And the thing, when I got into television, that really started to hit me in the head was, how hot is that stuff? One day, the Orange County Sheriff's Department, Fire Department, put me in fire gear so we could do a story about what it was like to fight a fire in 100-plus degree heat. They put me in fire gear, and we lit backfires. I actually was lighting backfires under the supervision of the fire department because they wanted me to see what that was like. I got so dehydrated so fast that I thought I was going to pass out. I lost it. I could not believe how quickly I sweated all the water out of me. What is it, thousands of degrees?
Well, I don't know if it's thousands, but it's just the intensity. You know, we typically have different fire gear that's a little bit heavier for interior structure firefighting and a little bit lighter gear with the outside, with the expectation that we have, you know, outside we can hide behind a wall or something. But, you know, we're starting to notice that when fire comes down with this intense wind and heat, that it's being outside feels sometimes like being in an interior structure fire, the same intensity of heat. And so no matter if you have a, you know, a tent that's going to protect you that's made out of aluminum foil, the reality is you've got to find places of refuge or really stay away from these fire fronts so that you can come into a safe location and do fire front following type of firefighting. But being right in front of it or where the wind's hitting you with that kind of fire that you're talking about, it's very intense and it's very dangerous. To share with you, I think it is, I don't know what the thousands of degrees are, but you know, I had a fire safe in my house burnt down. And my wife, before, she was saying, what should we do with these important documents? Oh, I'll put them in the safe. It's 1,300 degrees for 30 minutes. So they'll be fine. Well, those things were like black potato chips by the time I came back, the passports and everything inside the safe, which in my mind, I thought, ah, it's going to be fine in here. Let's put the important documents there. And, you know, it's like, you know, saving a terabyte of all of your data from your computer, I put it in the safe. That thing was toast. It was just this melted blob of plastic. And I thought, man, I should have put this safe in the back of the truck. So not thinking that, you know, it would be unattended for, you know, a period of time. So those are things that you're like, wow, that was hot.
Yeah, I mean, you get too close to the intense heat and a fire can start from the radiation, not from the actual flame, right?
That's correct. Yeah, you get preheating of the fuels and it's physics. It gets hot, whatever it is, no matter what, and it gets to that point where it'll burn and you get preheating with the topography as obviously with convection, you've got air currents, the heated gas, the smoke, if you will, preheats the fuel in front of it. And that's why fire obviously runs uphill typically faster than it will come downhill. But you throw the fuel, the weather, and the topography are the three things that we as firefighters are always paying attention to. And when you get into circumstances where the fuel's dry, the weather's hot, and you've got uphill runs of fire, it's extremely limited how you can manage that.
And that's where the Air Force comes in.
Correct.
Because I've watched these helicopter droppings and the plane, the DC-10,
yep,
that drops phosgene down, the chemical, the red chemical that kind of blankets over the hillsides. It's quite a show.
Right.
It's really something to watch.
And that's all strategic and very well planned out. Obviously, those are limited resources. So as an incident commander, you want to make sure that you're utilizing them to their absolute maximum levels and making sure that as you are using those phos-check drops and the rotor wing, the helicopters with water, that you're maximizing your efforts with those resources.
On the first two nights of the Thomas fire, you were the incident commander.
I wasn't the incident commander, but I was responsible for what we call a branch, which is a geographic area within the incident.
And in that branch, what were you having to think as you were strategizing about a fire that seemed so incredibly wild?
Right. And it was, I'll admit, it was like nothing I had ever seen. But with that, I was comfortable in falling back to my training, which kind of set priorities. And really the first one for us as firefighters is life safety. And for an extended period of time in that incident, we never got past life safety. It was getting people out of the way and coordinating with law enforcement and really just the general public to get them out of the path of the fire. And then once we did that, the next priority was structure defense and property, saving as much property as we could. But we really, for an extended period of time, longer than any wildland fire I've ever been a part of, life safety was the number one priority.
I've watched firefighters forever, for as long as I've been in broadcasting. And I've always been amazed, impressed, and a little scared as firefighters do what they do. I know you're trained. I know that, you know, you're in good shape. I know that you're in way better shape than I could ever be. But I do get a little scared for you sometimes because you really have to, you fight a fight.
And we appreciate that concern and we balance it. It's really, it comes down to risk versus gain, training, knowing and understanding, as I talked about before, the physics, whether you become a lot more educated than in terms of fire behavior than I ever thought I would be. It's kind of ironic, but when I got into the fire service, I didn't realize it was this technical and that the decisions you make and they have impacts on people. And really that's as a manager, that's the bottom line is we're looking out for not only our firefighters, but the public and really trying to make an extremely chaotic scene less chaotic.
I always thought it was interesting. One of the things I learned early on was that fire creates its own weather. So you can end up with these fire tornadoes, which are, I hate to say, spectacular to look at because that sounds like a positive thing, and it's not. It's like a tornado made of flame. It's pretty scary looking. But that and the winds that can be generated out of a fire can be really powerful. And so you may have environmental conditions outside of the fire that are one thing, but inside or immediately surrounding the fire, a completely different thing, right?
That's right, yeah. And, you know, many times, even when that you were talking about aviation, we have to ground the aviation because the fire creates its own wind, or you have such a large volume of smoke they can't get into, let's say, a strategic flank that they want to really work. So they have to wait till maybe the wind diminishes or till they actually get an opportunity to get in there. But, you know, earlier I was sharing with you, I'm starting to experience fires where outside fires, vegetation fires, are starting to feel like interior structure fires because of the way the wind will push down, like a down canyon wind will push down on top of you. It's normally fire will move uphill. Fire, you know, you light a fire in your stove and the flame goes up. You don't put, you know, stuff underneath the flame, but it's interesting to feel the wind overcome topography, the wind overcome, you know, natural things. You're like, I can't believe it would do that, and to watch it and just to push downhill on topography. We're starting to see that, you know, fires racing towards the ocean, you know, as well as uphill, they're pushing downhill because we have these extreme winds.
You made a comment earlier about what your dad told you. What were those words that he used? Boy,
pay attention out there, boy. Things are changing.
Yeah. So talk to me about that. Things are changing, huh?
Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, we were talking about the beetle disease and 90 million trees were dead. And I was sitting at the Region 1 and 6 meeting, which is down in San Diego, and the U.S. Forest Service head was there, and Sean LaGarza sat next to me, who is the head of the region, right? And there's fire chiefs from all around L.A. City, L.A. County, Orange County, Ventura, San Diego, and we all get together to plan these ready for fire season events and just, you know, get our game face on, you know, as May and June start to come in and we get those foaming winds of the fall, which we call Santa Anas. And Shauna leaned over to me and she goes, you know, Andy, they keep talking about climate change, but what we really have is a landscape change. She said, we will never see the Southern Sierras as a forest again in our life. And, you know, it's interesting, if you take a flight, you know, from here to Fresno, and if you just look out east and look at the number of, or just the forest, you're going to see patches of green. You'll see huge areas of just brown, those brown dead trees, miles and miles. That's a fire waiting to happen.
It reminds me of Mount St. Helens.
Yes.
Because when that erupted, everything in its path burned. And it was like little matchsticks. Trees were like busted into little matchsticks. And it was powerful. And so you talk about a landscape change, but climate change is an issue, right? It's a big issue. Because you're seeing a difference in the conditions from, say, 20 or 30 years ago when you got into the business?
There's definitely an impact, certainly, and it's a consideration. And really, it's whether you believe in it or not, the reality is to Chief Ortega's point, is things are changing, and we have to acknowledge that collectively as both the fire service and the public and react accordingly.
Andy, you're shaking your head yes.
Absolutely. You know, in my mind, I think about the 2009 fire at the Hesacita up in Santa Barbara area, which was right before the T fire in Santa Barbara, and they had these winds. And I remember thinking I was in such a great place, and I was listening on the radio as my adjoining strike team was getting burnt over, and I'm listening to that, fully engaged, every single engine in my strike team fully engaged, and I'm thinking, these are orchards that are burning in May. And I hadn't seen that. I mean, like since 1980, I'd seen extreme fire behavior, just like my dad had said. But I hadn't seen orchards burn just like brush. And so it was a new normal for us to start paying attention to. And I remember sitting with my group of fire captains and saying, write down a couple of lessons learned from this, from what we just experienced the last 48 to 72 hours. I said, this is going to be important for our future. You know, and almost everybody said that they were just surprised at how quick orchards were burning, ornamentals were burning, people's, you know, gardens were burning and things like that. And so we recognized things were changing then. And I said, we have to start planning instead of we're going to be safe next to this orchard, planning that that's going to burn, planning that that's not a safe zone where in the old days we say we're going to be good right here. We'll stay, we'll duck in behind this orchard or avocados. That's not the case anymore. And same with looking at rows and rows of homes, we're going to be safe right here. When you realize rows and rows of homes in the interior of a massive running fire is not even a safe place anymore, where it used to be. Oh, we'll be good in this cul-de-sac. And so those are things that we have to pay attention to moving into the future. And why I say that is we haven't had 10 years of rain to give us a new normal of rain again, or back to where we were. We're having this new normal of, you know, 6 to 8 inches of rain maybe in this period. And we're not at the point where we're saying, let's start capturing this water. Let's start, you know, really creating burn plans in this area so that we can, you know, burn this area. Oh, no, we might be a nesting season of a bird that we have to pay attention to, or might be a red-toed frog that we have to pay attention to, or it might be a trout that doesn't exist in the Ventura River bottom that we have to pay attention to. So maybe some of the leadership or policymakers needs to take a look and say, is this time for us to look at the current health of our communities, the current health of what might be a priority as opposed to a nesting season as bird? Because if I were to look at the Thomas fire and the destruction, that fire had no regard for the nesting season of that bird. And so nor did it have regard for the trout.
Or the homes. You know, and that's what fire does.
And it has
no mercy.
That's right. And I'm a true environmentalist. I really believe in protecting the environment, but I think it's going to take a multifaceted land management thought process and people that can bounce out of the box, the current box of, okay, we got to do this or that, but what's best for the whole?
You know, it sounds like you may have found what your calling is for your retirement.
I like retirement. So maybe after I build back my home. How's that?
Well, let's end on this note. You lost your home. That was sad. Nobody was hurt. That was good. You have insurance. That was good. You'll get your home back again. You lost things that were valuable. That was sad. But you also knew what a person should do because you were a firefighter all your adult life, and you knew about defensible space, and you knew about the things that you're supposed to think about in order to make it easier on firefighters to come in and fight fire if it happens in your neighborhood. What I'd like for you to share with us, and Jeff, you could pipe in afterwards, I'd like for you to share with us, now that you've been a victim of a fire, you've lost your home, but you also have that knowledge of fire behavior and being a firefighter, what would you tell people? You know, it's not just the same things that we're always being told. There's a lot more to it.
You know, I would say, first of all, if you lose something, start writing things down. It's cathartic. You know, the reason I agreed to come and chat with you primarily was because I knew there would probably be some healing to it. This is a long process of healing. I would say up front, live a pay it forward life, because the communities that you're involved in, whether it's a really great fire family or a really great church family, they're going to support you in these really gnarly times of need and these times of grief. So start living a generous life ahead of time. Prepare and be aware. Prepare yourself for any type of thing, you know, whether it's your insurance. There's a moment, which is like about a 1 minute moment, maybe two, where your insurance adjuster says, do you know what your coverage is? And it'll scare the bejesus out of your feet. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, I hope I have enough. And there's that moment where you go, I really haven't even paid attention to what that coverage is or what my limits are and things like that. So prepare, take a look at those kind of things, you know, make sure you have some recent photos of your house, because when you start doing the arduous accounting for everything that's in the shed that you've saved for 25, 37 years, I've been married. So think about accumulating stuff from dad's death, mom's death, all these heirlooms that you're planning on handing down to your children, you know. And then all these people say, you should have packed it all up. I couldn't have lifted the piano and put it in the truck. So, you know, you're going to have to be able to say goodbye to some of these things. You have to say what's important and prioritize your life. I think when people give an evacuation order in why I left, I can think back to this day. If I was in command and I said evacuate, what would I want people to do? And, you know, Jeff will share that these guys did over 70 rescues in that first night. That is so much time consumed in rescuing folks that were trying to save their homes or didn't know about it, that could have been occupied by really fighting fire, but they prioritized life. I was so grateful that they thought ahead and said, start clearing Ventura now. With law enforcement, local OES, and fire really putting their hands together and saying, let's prioritize life. We can look at the largest fire in California history and have this conversation now that there was two deaths. And to this day, I wish I could have went and got that lady. I bet she was so frightened. I wish I could have just went up there and put her in my truck and got her out of there. Because I can't imagine driving through all of that, being as afraid as she, you know, probably as frightened as she was, wrecking and dying in that fire. And then the other young guy just getting disconnected from his crew and getting in a bad spot and losing his life, you know. But with that being said, I'm so grateful that so few people were lost in this fire, even though I did lose my house. So preparedness, pay attention, evacuate, and then pay attention to all the practical things.
You know, there's one thing that really is worth taking a second to talk about as we wrap this up. Reverse 911 calls were really the way to get a hold of people, but now a lot of people don't have landlines anymore. They have cell phones. They have smartphones. And so now we've kind of gone from reverse 911 to app-based notifications, but you have to sign up for them. They don't come to you. Talk to me about that and let everybody know what they need to do.
So depending on where you live, in Ventura County, we have VC Alert, and that's you can just use whatever search engine you have, type that in. It will lead you into the program, allow you, give you step-by-step instructions to sign up. The majority of other municipalities offer similar type service. And what it does is, regardless of the type of emergency, you will receive information and direction. And to me, the fascinating thing with our county OES department has an ability to, they can literally draw a polygon on a map and send out the message to that area. I mean, the where we are with technology to me is fascinating, and it's only going to get better.
And so it's VC Alert in Ventura County, but Orange County, Riverside County, San Bernardino County, all these counties, and wherever you happen to live, in whatever state you happen to be in, or whatever country you might be listening from, there is something similar for you, and that's something you can check out with your local fire departments. Look, I want to thank both of you. And you have so much to tell and so much to offer, and I'm glad we've had this opportunity to chat. And I'm sorry you went through those things, but I'm glad there's a rainbow at the end of all of this. And what was that your dad said again?
Pay attention, boy. Things are changing out there.
And now all these years later, what do you say?
Yeah, you really need to.
More like, what the hell?
Yeah, what the hell?
That too.
All right.
Thank you for having us.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
I think the takeaway from this episode is be prepared. You know, cut the brush from around your house. Do the things that firefighters say are necessary so you don't end up in the same situation as that firefighter and lose your home. It's a good time to subscribe to our podcast, What the Hal. You can do that through your various podcast outlets like Google Play and iTunes Store. And we'll see you next time.